Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our live broadcast. Funny thing is, when I say that, there's not actually anyone watching. It does let YouTube know that this was a live broadcast. Or maybe, I don't know how it works, maybe people are watching as soon as I start broadcasting. I've never actually watched one of these live, obviously. So today we are on to chapter 8, and we are going to number 76. These are really interesting. I like these ones. Appamattika. Appamattiko, appamattika, these are insignificant. Appamattika esa bhikkhave parihani. Or no, this, these? Parihani, no, this. Parihani means loss. Appamattika means of little importance, of little measure. Literally means of little measure, of little significance, a small matter, insignificant. This loss is insignificant, monks. That is to say, the loss of relatives. Etang patikittang bhikkhave patikittang patikha. Patikita. I don't know this one. I don't know what this word means. Nope. Anyway, I'm assuming it means the opposite of appamattika. He says the worst. The worst, that is the worst of losses is the loss of wisdom. Leave it to the Buddha to just mess with our sense of priority, you know? To tell us. Leave it to the Buddha to be the one to tell all those grieving widows and orphans, all the bereaved, to tell them their loss is insignificant. Buddhism works on really on a whole other level, apart from mundane concerns. The most hardcore of religion. It's a shame that it's been watered down, and a lot of people, a lot of Buddhists focus on a sort of softcore version of Buddhism that focused on worldly things and social welfare. Therapy, stress relief. And Buddhism deals with it on a whole other level, beyond worldly concerns. When you think about the Buddha story himself, what he went through, the losses that he went through, I mean, that's really the point, is this is so much bigger, so much more profound than just our ordinary concerns. We worry about the most ridiculous of things. And many we recognize as ridiculous. You know, we worry about a pimple, We worry about our weight. We worry about what other people think of us. We worry about our grades. We worry about our employment. We worry about money. You know, so we worry about things, and we put an increasing level of value on these things. So a pimple might be most ridiculous. You think, okay, well, it's not really worth worrying about. What other people think about me, though, well, that's a little bit more important. And then my study, and then my work, and money, and these kind of things. And way up here is our relatives, our own health, you know, our own life, the life of other people, our relationships, things that we believe have some sort of meaning, importance, worth worrying about, and that the loss is somehow significant. It's really not. This is the Buddha's teaching here. These things are still very insignificant. They're completely insignificant. There's no meaning. There's no value to that loss. Or if there is a value, it's far, far. There is, it's not that there isn't a value. It's just compared to things that are actually important, it's insignificant. I mentioned this before, I think, but when I was taking Buddhism in university, one of my friends who was a Catholic came up to me after a class once and just said, you know, Buddhism is just, it's such a relief, the idea that you could keep coming back again and again, you know, that you don't just have one chance. That's Buddhism. And it's true, it really is a mind opener. It's a relief from all the worries and stresses, all the things we have. I mean, imagine being Catholic and having to worry about going to hell for eternity, you know? The things we worry about. Buddhism really blows the roof off of all that. Because in the face of eternity, what does it all mean? Even hell isn't terribly significant, because it comes and it goes. When you think of eternity, when you think of time erasing all things, you know, it's not just that in 100 years we're all going to be dead, that's for sure. But in 1,000 years no one will remember us. In 100,000 years there'll be no trace of us. In 1,000,000 years, there will be no one, the universe will be nothing like it is now. And all of that is coming, all of that is real, all of that is in the near future. 1,000,000 years goes by in a flash. And then it comes again and again. And it's not just a long time. Eternity is not just a long time. What it means is that there can be no meaning to these things, to some event. Yeah. These things that we cry over, that we mourn, that we worry and fret about, and consider to be important. There's only one category of things that can be important. Those are the things that we carry with them, qualities, wisdom. It's the difference between worrying about the ocean and how you're going to cross the ocean and worrying about the boat. Our lives are like an ocean, the world, the universe. Our experience of samsara is like an ocean. And we worry about the weather, we worry about the direction. And much more important is the boat, the ship, the vehicle. Wisdom is the vehicle. No. We worry too much about the circumstances in our life. Oh, am I going to get this? Am I going to get that? if you get the things you want and you're not ready to accept and to own them, you know, to deal with them. When people wish for promotion, well, the question is, are you ready for a promotion? They wish for a relationship. Are you able to, you know, how are you going to deal with the things that you get? How are you going to live with them? Is that always getting what you want is not the answer. If you're spoiled and the things that you get spoil you rotten, they end up being a curse. The only thing that's really important is how you respond, how you react, how you interact. Wisdom is the most important because it determines how you're going to interact with the things that you get. Loss of relatives, it's meaningless. Loss of wisdom, a person who has no wisdom, I'm not quite sure what is meant by loss of wisdom. The wisdom is not an easy thing to lose once you get it. It is possible, mundane wisdom. But still, it's one of those things that's so valuable because you can't lose it. Well, it's harder to lose anyway. It's not like concentration. If you fix and focus your mind so that you never get angry and never get greedy, you can do it. But it's not as powerful as wisdom because it comes and it goes. But wisdom is very deep. And super mundane wisdom, the wisdom of a sotapanna even, there's no going back from that. But I think the point is the difference between wisdom and relatives. Don't worry so much about people. Don't worry so much about even people. You know, it's a shock because there are many more things, other things the Buddha could have compared it to. They say even relatives, which is one thing that we mourn the most, right? What is the one thing that in this life that we mourn the most? If your father, your mother, your child, your sister, your brother, if someone you love, one of your relatives dies. It's one of the worst, right? And the Buddha says, insignificant. And then he says the same about wealth and the same about fame. Insignificant is the loss of wealth, insignificant is the loss of fame. The worst thing to lose is wisdom. There's a quote. Here's a Buddha quote. I want to look up this concept of losing wisdom. What exactly does he mean by kamma sakata panyaya jhana panyaya vipassana panyaya magga panyaya parihani esa pachima esa lamaka? I mean, you can fall away from, I guess the point is you fall away from wisdom or you become lost. I bet the commentary does say, but I don't really have time to go through it. Anyway, the absence of wisdom is worst. Wisdom is most important, is the point here. Relatives, wealth, even fame. And then he says, therefore you should train yourselves, thus we will increase in wisdom. It is in such a way that you should train yourself. You don't worry about your circumstances, even people. People come and go. There's no question that all the people we know are going to be separated from. We're born alone, we die alone, we're born alone, we die alone, again and again. The people we're with, they come and they go. We're like, what is this? I think it's a poem or something. We're like trains passing in the night or something like that. The very brief time we have together. And yet we make the mistake of getting, it sounds cruel, I suppose, but we do make the mistake of getting attached, and as a result we suffer. And that sounds like a terrible thing to say, but if you look at it from the point of view of a Buddha who sees people doing this again and again and again and again and remembers doing this again and again and comes to think, you know, what is the point? Is this really, you know, it seems worth it. It seems to us who can't remember anything that this one life is somehow rich, valuable. But if you look at it objectively, there's a lot of suffering in life. And then to do it again and again and again, you start to wonder what's really the point? And with the precarious nature of human life and the potential to be reborn as an animal or in hell, it's actually quite scary because we don't know what we're going to be in our next life, which direction we're going to go. Again, because our vehicle is uncertain. If we're fixed and focused on our experiences, our minds can easily become corrupted. So we focus on wisdom. How should we increase in wisdom? The most basic fundamental wisdom that we're looking for is simply to see things as they are. This is important to understand. Wisdom isn't theory. That's not real wisdom. We learned in the Visuddhimagga on Sunday that there's three types of wisdom. Suttamaya panya, from hearing. That's what you hear me say, or what you hear the Buddha say, or you read. Cintamaya panya means from thinking, when you think and you use logic and reason. But the third one, bhavanamaya panya, comes just from seeing, from watching, what you learn about yourself when you meditate. Oh boy, I've got anger and issues. Oh boy, look at me hurting myself. Why am I doing that? Seeing the nature of your mind, seeing I'm hurting myself, no one else is hurting me. And the wisdom to see that the things that we cling to are not worth clinging to. Very simple wisdom. In fact, just knowing this is rising, this is falling, that's wisdom. It's the difference between seeing things as they are and judging them. When you don't know this is rising, you know it as good, as bad, as me, as mine, and all the bad stuff comes, all the problems come, attachment, aversion, that kind of thing. When you just know this is rising, this is falling, your mind is pure, there's wisdom there. You do it enough, it starts to sink in. Oh, this is just rising, oh, I see. It's not really good or bad or me or mine. I don't have to control it. I don't have to force it. I don't have to be in charge. Pain, thoughts, emotions. None of these things are me or mine. None of them are good or bad. You start to see that. Oh, this is just pain. This is just thoughts. This is just this emotion. And you start to let it go. Anyway, so that's the little bit of Dhamma for tonight. We'll stop there and let's see if we have some questions. Robin, you don't have to come here every night. I know, you know, I don't have a day job, so this is fine for me to come every night, but please don't feel obligated to be here. If some days you aren't, that's fine.
I'll show up when I can Monday.
Great.
So someone sent me a question to ask you. And it is, how to know in day-to-day to practice where we have to stick to conventions and can't go with paramattha, like while reading, studying, and talking with someone. And I have to admit, I don't know what paramattha is.
Paramattha, atta, is missing a T there. Atta with two T's. Atta means meaning or nature. Meaning, it really means. Parama means ultimate or highest. So paramattha dhamma is a dhamma in the highest sense or the highest meaning. It means this ultimate reality. That's the translation of the word paramattha dhamma. So the Abhidhamma deals in paramattha dhammas, real dhammas. The suttas deal in concepts. They deal with people, places, things, but the Abhidhamma just deals with qualities. If you read the Abhidhamma, it's quite breathtaking. For a Buddhist, for anyone else, it just seems dense and unreadable and boring. But for a Buddhist, it's breathtaking. Learning about these dhammas and lists of different aspects of reality. Right, so you don't have to stick to conventions. The reality is still there. When you're talking to someone, your lips are moving. There's a feeling of that. There are thoughts going through your mind. There are emotions. You can be mindful of all of those, even while you're talking. In between, you know, the point is when you're reading, you're not trying to practice meditation. You're trying to imbibe some knowledge. So you can't meditate at the moment when you're trying to understand something. But in between moments, you can be mindful, and especially in between sessions. So you do 5 minutes of studying, 5 minutes of meditation, or half an hour of meditating, half an hour of studying, 5 minutes of meditating, that kind of thing. If you do breaks for meditation, or even just every moment that you remember to be mindful, just be mindful. As we learned yesterday or the day before, a moment of goodness is makes your life not a waste. No, we don't have any other questions. Just one and one more down below.
There's one more. Okay. Is there a cumulative effect of wisdom over multiple births coming across the Dhamma in this life completely by chance? Seems complete by chance.
It's probably not by chance, though it could be. Things can just conspire to come together, but usually not, you know. No, and I think an Orthodox Buddhist would scold me for even suggesting it, that because there's so many things that have to come together. You have to be born a human. You have to be born a human in the time of the Buddha. You have to have all your good faculties. You know, you have to be able to understand, and you have to not be sickly and weak, or worse, be corrupt of mind. And then you have to have the opportunity. You know, to just seems like just a chance, right? Like I have three brothers. None of them are really interested in Buddhism or spirituality even the way I am. I mean, they all seem like nice people, and I suppose I can understand the different ways in which we've connected and probably were born together for those reasons, but none of them have sort of the inclination to, or ever had the inclination towards the sort of things that I have had an inclination towards. So I wouldn't say it's chance. You know, I mean, consider becoming a monk. If you look at all the people who try to become a monk, and this isn't to brag, because I'm nothing, you know, I'm not some special person, but there's a group of us who really had an easy time becoming monks, and that's those of us who are still monks. And it seems like we must have done something different in past lives, because, you know, I never wanted this robe, but I never have, and it's just never really been an issue in my mind. It was like, as soon as I learned about becoming a monk, it was like, that's it, you know. But other people who have, even students of mine who have ordained, you can see there's something very different going on in their minds. They can't do it, they can't take it. They disrobe very quickly, or after some time, you know, they just can't take it. That's not to say that, you know. But I would say very little of what we come across in our lives is most likely coincidence. Sure, it's, you know, it's hard to predict and it's complex, but the big themes of our lives are probably very much associated with past lives. So, but simply to answer your question, wisdom, of course, has an effect over multiple births. I mean, wisdom has an effect on the future. The future includes next lives, so everything we do affects our future in some way or another, big or small. And it's more complicated, you know, the effects affect each other. The effects affect each other. Huh. So that's it, two questions. Must have answered them all already.
I think so. You have a lot of questions the last few nights, so.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not really concerned about getting questions. It's nice when they come, but I was thinking, you know, this is really, really this is for my one meditator who's here, and when meditators come, more meditators come, this is a chance for me to give them a little bit of Dhamma every day. So the fact that I'm broadcasting it is kind of actually secondary. I think that's fair to say. Even though you compare one person to hundreds and thousands of people who watch my YouTube videos, maybe it's not fair to say then, but it's a whole different issue because, as you know, doing the meditation course is on a whole other level, right? This is much more the important work that we're doing.
It's very nice to listen to your Dhamma Talks live. But it's nice to listen to them on YouTube as well.
Here we have a new question.
We do. Is the experience of attachment then suffering the loss required in order to rise above ignorance?
No. The only thing that's required to rise above ignorance is seeing things as they are. Seeing that the things that you... not exactly, but the point is you have to have ignorance in order to let go of ignorance. And it's actually a good question, but maybe not for the reason that you think. It's, because you can have ignorance technically without craving, but I think that's just academic because ignorance leads to craving. We like and dislike things, we have partialities. Because we don't understand that things are impermanent, unsatisfying, uncontrollable. So all you have to do is see that things are impermanent, unsatisfying, and uncontrollable. And if you see that, that's considered the dispelling of ignorance. And as a result of dispelling that ignorance about things, about experiences, you won't give rise to attachment. So it's not about suffering the loss. That's all sutta and jinta. It's all thinking, you know. You think, yeah, you know, it's not worth clinging to because when I clung to it before, I suffered. That's not really what we're talking about here. You don't have to see it like that. You just have to see that the things that you cling to are not worth clinging to. You have to see that the objects of experience are impermanent. Because they're impermanent, they're not worth clinging to. You don't have to cling to them to know that they're not worth clinging to. Once you see them clearly, you'd think it would be absurd to cling to such a thing. Why? Because it comes and it goes. It's gone in a moment. It's really not the sort of thing that you could possibly cling to.
Bhante, I think we missed one last night, or maybe it came in after we signed off. But is it bad if you're a meditator and you don't get out that often and you don't socialize much? I've been told that it's unhealthy for me to do that.
Bad if you don't? If you don't socialize? No,
right,
I you know, the Buddha said, yata eka tata brahma, or something, I don't know quite the grammar. One is like Brahma. Brahma means God. When you're alone, you're like Brahma. Yata deva tata duve. Like the angels are two. So when you're together with another person, that's like being an angel. Three people is like a village. Four people or more, it's an uproar, like a commotion. Being alone is great. If you don't socialize, don't worry about it. I don't think it's fair to say that you become you have to find. I suppose that's not quite fair to say, because the question is, if you're alone, what are you doing? So just being alone in and of itself is not good. Or is not good. It may not be bad, but there's nothing good about it. It depends what you're doing alone. The point is that being alone allows you to do much more soul-searching, so to speak, learning about yourself. And that's what's important about being alone. You can't easily do that when you're with them. But being with good people on the other hand, can encourage you to spend time alone when you have good friends, but not socializing. No, I think it still stands, because if you're talking about getting out and socializing, it's a secret that most people don't know. It's not really worth it. And this idea that somehow socializing is going to make you happy, it's really not. It's just going to make you all neurotic, worried about what other people think of you, and addicted to company and enjoyment and pleasure and even drugs and alcohol and all sorts of things.
I think the person that asked that question is one of our younger meditators, and that's something that happens. You know, families worry about you, that you're not going out and doing.
Tell them it's okay, you're Buddhist. Oh, okay, well, in that case, I don't know how well that would go over in most families. All right. Well, if you have more questions, you know where I'll be tomorrow. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you, Bhante. Good night.